Did you know there's an online cannabis company that ships federally legal THC right to your door? And they found a way to combine THC with carefully selected functional ingredients to create gummies, baked goods, and flower for whatever type of buzz you'd want. I'm talking about Mood.com. They have an incredible line of cannabis gummies, and you get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. This isn't some rinky-dink discount of 5 or 10%. This is 20% off your first order. Forget one-size-fits-all supplements that only get you high. Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood you're looking for. My favorite are the Sleepy Time Advanced gummies. That's right, those are for sleepy time. You know when you just can't fall asleep? Take these and they'll put you right in the mood. Beyond gummies, Mood also has a selection of flower, pre-rolls, bakery treats, and beverages. Listen, you can find gummies to just get you high pretty much everywhere these days. But Mood's functional gummies combine premium, federally legal THC with targeted botanicals to help you get into the perfect mood, usually in as little as 15 minutes. And everything ships discreetly right to your door. No dispensary lines, no awkward conversations, just better days and nights delivered to your doorstep. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. So head to Mood.com, find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code SPECIALISTS when you check out to save 20% on your first order. Try it today at mood.com.
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door. No insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
The Survivor Specialists are back, and today we are joined by the winner of Australian Survivor Brains versus Brawn 2, Miles Kwa. He's here to help us start our Survivor AU versus the World coverage. I mean, everybody's been asking us about doing this cast assessment for so long because they just are so excited for Tony and Parvati and Shawnee and George and Sari and all of these Australian legends, and then even some of the world players who I don't really know well. And I was like, we got to make sure we do this at the right time. When we're going to do it, it's got to be the right time. And I reached out to Miles, and Miles was like, I'll do it with you guys. And I was like, well, if the winner of the most recent season of Australian Survivor is willing to do this with us, it's officially the right time. So here we are, super excited to dive in and get into this cast with you. And Miles, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, I'm excited. Well, I listened to some of your coverage of my season, and you seem to struggle a little bit with the knowledge of some of the older seasons. So I felt like I really needed to come in there and patch up some of the Australian Survivor knowledge for you guys.
Appreciate it.
I love to hear that, because when it comes to the U.S. seasons, like, I could tell you who was seventh place on Thailand. I could tell you who was ninth place on Palau. Like, I can give you all the random stuff. Yeah. But with Australia, like, I really have been binge watching this in the most extreme way of watch three episodes, talk about it, literally start the next three episodes. And so for me, it's just been going in one ear and out the other. But what's amazing, I think, about what they did with the Australian cast here is I know every one of these people. Like, I'm ready to go. I get
it's a crazy good cast. Like, it's ridiculous, the cast that they got. Honestly, it's part of why I'm, like, so excited to talk about it, is because we have been absolutely blessed with this absurdly good cast. Like, I don't know how they managed to get some of these people back. Like, I don't think anyone was expecting to ever see Janine Ellis play again. And, like, Sarah, it was another one who hasn't played in any of the opportunities that they've had to come back. But we've got them back. And, yeah, it's exciting.
Now, this was filmed before your season, right?
No, it was filmed directly after my season. So literally a couple of days after my season finished, they apparently flew into Samoa to start doing their stuff. Yes.
Wow. Okay. That's crazy. What a quick turnaround. Even Survivor doesn't have that quick of a turnaround.
Yeah. And apparently they're literally just on the same beaches as well. So I'm going to get some flashbacks when I'm watching Australia versus the world.
For sure.
Sorry, apologies, because I'm a little bit under the weather, so I will be coughing and sniffing occasionally.
It's fine for me. It's just, you know, for anybody who's listening, get ready for that. It's not me. I'm not clearing my throat, or, as I found out, I say literally too much. It was the latest comment that I got over on Apple Podcasts here. So it's okay. The cough will prevent me from saying literally, hopefully. But
yeah,
I want to, before we even dive into the cast, Miles, I want to ask you what you think about the format for this. Are you happy with the fact that they're doing a shortened season? Because you're talking about this cast is so incredible. Do you feel a little cheated that we're looking at potentially what people are thinking is like 16 to 20 days? Or do you feel like that's enough for what this is?
So there's two sides of this, right? On one hand, yeah, it objectively is kind of a not as good a game, right? In that, like, one of the things I really love about Australian Survivor is because it's such a big game with the 24 players, and especially with 12 players per tribe, what ends up happening is you end up with, like, alliances within alliances. You end up with a lot, like, Australian Survivor, especially recently, has been very fluid because you end up with these really complex dynamics that, like, occur between these tribes because they're massive, and it's over like 50 days and you build these really deep relationships. So obviously you don't have that, and it's just a statistics thing where the less people, the less possible combinations you have of like different strategies and different like voting blocks and whatnot. However, that I don't care about that, because the fact is that for a lot of these players, I think the draw to actually coming back, like, I imagine this is a really big thing for someone like Janine or someone like Shawnee or some of the US Survivor players, is the fact that it's a shorter season, which means, because the fact is Australian, like, Survivor, especially Australian Survivor, brutal on your body, like really brutal on your body. I lost like 12 kilograms while I was out there. And so for, I think, some of these players that weren't necessarily interested in coming back, the production coming to them and telling them, hey, you're only going to have to play for 20 days, however much it is, however long it is, that is part of the appeal. So I don't think we'd be getting someone like Janine Ellis back if it was a full season, because she's got better things to do. Because I don't know how much you know about Janine, but she is actually like an incredibly wealthy businesswoman. So even people like Shawnee, the US players, like, those guys are all finished with the US Survivor. But because it's like, okay, it's a short season with some of the big hitters, they're like, okay, come on, let's go, let's play. And yeah, so I think we can kind of put aside the specifics of being a bit disappointed by the game format, just for like, how do we get these players all on the same beach together? And this is how we got it. So, and I think the spectacle of having such an incredible cast will kind of overcome any issues with the format.
And I think when I look at this, right, it's 14 players, and where a lot of us are like, oh man, like you said, 24 is such a nice number. Now Survivor 50 is doing 24. So we're actually going to get kind of, they're adopting the Australian Survivor format a little bit. Thankfully, I think it was a good time to do it. But then when you look, you're like, okay, it's 14. Well, US Survivor started with 16. And if you go as recently as Survivor 18, like, that had 16 players. So 14 is not that much shorter. It's just, for me, when you were starting to hear the rumors about this, and I don't know what it was like for you and you, like how much you were involved in the rumors when this was going on, but I was starting to hear that it was going to be a full like 10v10 or a 12v12 or something like that of Australian survivors and US survivors. And, you know, I know somebody like Johnny Fairplay who talks a lot about Australian survivor and stuff. I mean, seeing him go and play with King George, I would have been down for that. Like, I know that the two of them are kind of like buddies. So I would have been excited to see that kind of thing. And then when I saw, okay, they got three US survivors, I was a little disappointed. But then when I saw the three they got, I also said, well, you couldn't have really asked for anything more than getting Tony, Suri, and Parvati. And now we obviously are going to have Suri on 50, but it's amazing. I mean, and you as an Australian Survivor fan, those are the three, if you're looking at US, that you'd probably want to see, right?
And Sandra was already on Australian Survivor too. Yeah. So we take her out of the equation.
Yeah, if I'm looking at who you want from the US, they're probably the three as far as big names that are at the top of the list. Like maybe Boston Rob would be up there as well. Sandra's already played, but you know, those are the names that are like on the Mount Rushmore of US Survivor players. So I mean, I wasn't following the rumors that closely, to be honest, because I was actually preparing for my season. So I wasn't as like in it as other people. You're exactly right. And the other thing as well is that on any given season, right, like let's say you've got 16, 18, however many people, you're going to have kind of 4, 5, 6 people who aren't going to get much of an edit, who might be kind of like dead wood players who aren't going to be big impact. We know that the majority of these guys are going to be big characters, big players. Like no one's going to be there just coasting along. And that's what the appeal is here. Even though it's less players, it's just going to be just completely full on.
Yeah.
And so on US Survivor, a lot of times we have a quick turnaround for some castaways going into the next season. So we have like Riz and Savannah going into 50 and they just played 49. Was there any shot for Brains versus Brawn 2 to be considered at all?
I don't think so. The thing is, those quick turnarounds, a lot of the time, it's like a couple of months afterwards. While I'm talking about, they started filming the Australia versus the World days after we finished filming, is my understanding. And I know for me personally, I would have been in zero state to be able to play Survivor again. I'm 5'10". I was 58 kilos. I was dead. I was dead. I was struggling to just get back to normal, basically. But it obviously would have been nice to think about. But no, there was no way.
Right. I just want to do the math here for the US listeners who have no idea what a kilogram is. That's 127 pounds. So to put that in perspective, Miles and I are about the same height and I weigh about 180. So that's how done Miles was by the time he was done at the end of the season. And I think it was fascinating though, like watching your season and then thinking about this season coming up, because you and AJ played such aggressive games the entire time. Yeah. And you were very open about how aggressive you were. And I when we watched Tony play Game Changers, the time that he comes out to play Game Changers, he was dead in the water the moment he stepped on that beach because he was too aggressive and he had such a reputation and everything. So I started saying to myself, well, what's Tony and Suri and Parvati going to do going on to a tribe where they're outnumbered off the bat by the world? But then I watch what you and AJ do, and I start watching some of these other seasons. Like, I'm halfway through Heroes versus Villains right now, but I know what happens in the season, so don't feel bad telling me where Shawnee and George and everything finish. Yeah. Like, I know it's a 4th and 9th, so I know what happens. But when I watch even what George does on that season, I say, no, Australia is a different game where the aggressiveness is almost rewarded more than it is on the US version. So part of me now has hope. You've given me hope that Tony and Suri and Parvati are going to be able to navigate the chaos of being on a tribe where they're outnumbered from the start.
Well, when I was looking things up, a few of the world, either one or two of the world members are winners as well. So that might insulate them on the world tribe, being like, okay, winners might get targeted. Let's let the winners work together. And once you eliminate one or two of the people who aren't from the US, then the US have the numbers and then they're good. So they just need like one or two to like follow along with them and then they have the numbers. Where the Australian Survivor, or that tribe, we have just David.
Yeah, but I think it's a bit different for the Australian tribe because while, yeah, sure, David is the only winner out there, there are some huge characters out there. And there are some really big threats as well. Like, let's just start off by talking about the fact that George is screwed. Like, you look at the cast, you look at the Australia tribe, and George is done. Like, I don't see any world in which George comes out of this all right. First of all, he's coming in with probably the biggest threat of anyone there, maybe bar David. But even then, because it's not about, if you're playing with George, you wouldn't be necessarily worried about him winning, but it's more about how he could just like single-handedly destroy your game, right? Like George is that cracked player who you can be planning for everything and he can come up with something that's just totally completely different out of left field that you haven't even thought of. He's a guy that's going to pull stuff out of his ass. So as far as threat to win, I don't think a lot of people would be looking at him that high as a threat to win, but as a threat to your personal game, everyone would be looking at George. And then you take into account the pre-game connections that all these guys have. You look at Dave, Luke, Janine, Sarah, even Kirby. So Kirby, for example, used to work with Luke. And Luke, if I remember correctly, I'm pretty sure Luke actually was the one who recommended to Kirby to go on Australian Survivor, right? Luke played with David on Champions vs. Contenders 2. They both played with Janine. Luke played with Sarah. Sarah's actually friends with David. Sarah was the person who recommended David go on. And so George and Shawnee both. But Shawnee, you have a lot more faith in her to be able to kind of slide through than you would with George because I think her social game's a little bit smoother. I don't think she's got quite the same level of disruptive threat level that George does. Well, you're looking at George and you're just like, how is this guy going to get through? Especially because there's so many big personalities on that tribe. Like people like Luke, David, Kirby, they're people who showed in their season they need to be the top dog. Like they want to be the top dog. And George is going to be like, he's going to be the screen hog in most of the season. He's going to be the guy that is soaking up all the screen time, that is large and in charge. And those guys will be looking at George and like, we do not want to play with this guy.
Go ahead, McKenna.
If we think George is dead in the water, here's the question. Do we want him? Like, was this still a good, not casting decision, but like if we know he has no shot and is probably going out early, would we rather have someone else in his spot? Is there someone else that could have had more longevity in the game than George, or do we want George to see what he can do?
Because George isn't drawing dead because it's George. George is drawing dead because you look at the other tribe connections. It's just the structure of the tribe. And the thing is, while you could argue like, it'd be nice to get a different people on so that there's not so many pregame connections. If you look at who you got on the Australia tribe, I don't think you can do much better than that as far as just getting the best players out there that you could, between getting people like Luke, David, Shawnee, all these guys, and then getting Janine and Sarah back for the first time. Like, you are ending up with all these pregame connections, but if you've got that available, you just got to take it.
Yeah.
And my thing with George is, as somebody who, again, I haven't watched Titans versus Rebels, but I've seen enough of his Heroes versus Villains game to see, I thought he was going to be dead in the water coming out of his
first. If you trust anyone to be able to do it, it's George.
Right. But when I watch that, I say, man, this guy's insane. And honestly, to me, he's the most entertaining part of Australian Survivor so far. And I love the casting that they've done. Like, in terms of the stars, Miles, you talked about earlier, Australian Survivor does like to be like, well, that person didn't work, we'll just give them zero confessionals and they'll be out in a couple episodes, forget them. But with the stars, I feel like he really stands out just because the strategic mind is there. And I mean, you did it on your season, you know, with the amount of advantages and idols and stuff that Australian Survivor is willing to hide, George could find himself in an okay position. He's been somebody who's been able to use that stuff as ammunition to get further in the game. So I'm not going to count him out right off the bat, but I do think your point about the relationships and the connections is big there. Especially, what is Shawnee and George's relationship like now after Heroes Villains? Does anybody know?
I don't know in too much detail, but my understanding is that they're not like super close or anything, right? There are people who post game are really remain really close friends. Like, I'm pretty sure Luke, Janine, and Dave are all, I don't know that they're super close, but they're close enough that it would be a thing for them potentially coming back. I don't know if Shawnee and George have that sort of relationship.
And I mean, for me, If that ends up being the case where it's Janine, David, Sarah, and Luke who just kind of take over that tribe, I know people will be bummed at the lack of Shawnee and George for sure. But for me, I'm okay with that. And I don't really know Kirby because, again, I haven't seen Titans Rebels. But I'm okay with what takes place there because you like what Australian Survivor's doing here that US didn't do when they did 50 is there's people that they're pulling from. Like Sarah is somebody that even as I watched, I said, well, Sarah certainly must have played again. Like absolutely had to have played again. And then I found out she hadn't. And I was really surprised. And I started to see that there was a clamoring for her to come back. And mm-hmm. and then Janine as well. So I feel like they've done a good job where even if we watch Luke and David eat up a lot of screen time for the third time, at least we're also going to see them paired up with a duo that has only played once that we have been wanting to see play again. I think that's interesting. And I think Australian Survivor really did a good job of balancing that out, especially since you're talking just seven people. Yeah. And you're talking, we're going to do this massive thing that US Survivor has never done before. And we're going to try to, you know, we're going to try to kind of steal the limelight a little bit. I think that they did such a good job with this. And there's really no bad way for the Australian tribe to shake out, which is not the case with Survivor 50, in my opinion.
Though I do worry about the Australian tribe, because as I was doing my research, Shawnee has lost each time she played, her original tribe lost the first three challenges.
Yeah, so... looking at challenges, that U.S. tribe, if you look at the international tribe, if you look at the non-U.S. people in the international tribe, very stacked. So Rob Bentele is a huge challenge beast. Apparently, he's just, like, enormous. Tommy Marinen, is it? I'm probably butchering the pronunciation there. But Tommy from Finland, apparently he was a really big challenge threat on his season. Apparently Cassandra was a very strong challenge competitor on her season. Obviously Parvati is a fantastic challenge competitor. And so there are some very strong challenge threats over on that US side. While if you're looking at the Australian side, I think it's probably a little bit lighter in the challenge department. Obviously they got Dave, who's a beast. Luke's a pretty strong competitor as well. But once you get up like past those two, everyone else there are more middling or weaker challenge competitors, especially when it comes to the big group challenges. Like someone like Shawnee, for example, is a strong individual challenge competitor, like has won a lot of individual challenges, but isn't one of the strongest like group challenges, especially because Australian Survivor does prioritize, unfortunately for me on my season, does prioritize so much brute physical strength. And it is like, I remember when I went out there and seeing all the big guys around, just being a smaller person is just, even if you're an athletic person, like I'm a very fit guy, being a smaller person is just a huge disadvantage. And if you look at the world tribe, that tribe is just massive. It's just full of mass, like huge units.
Yeah. I mean, the biggest thing is that they're just a little bit older, right? Like Tony's in his 50s, Cerise in her 50s. That might be the only thing. What do you think it is? And this gets to something that I've always wondered, and I wonder if it goes through your head. What do you think it is about the AU version that kind of makes the players and Jonathan even really, just push the big physical, strong people a little bit more than the US version is? Because in the US version, we're having Jonathan and Joe back on 50 and people are like, wow, we already saw them. Like, we know what they're going to do. And like, good for Jonathan. He finished fourth, but he's going to be an early merge boot here. Whereas in these seasons, like you just beat Kalen at the final tribal council. Yeah. We've seen David win All-Stars. We've seen Luke go far. Even in David's season, like he's there at the end with Moana, who, you know, is physical. So what do you think it is about that difference there? And do you think that'll play into the season?
So talking more generally, Australian Survivor is a very different audience to US Survivor, because US Survivor, especially nowadays, is much more of kind of its own niche community, while Australian Survivor is actually marketed for like the broader Australian public, basically. It's a much more like general audience. And what that means, and a really big part of the sales pitch for Australian Survivor is the challenges. Like all the casuals really love the challenges. And so Australian Survivor casting really loves pushing. We got the big guys and they're running at each other and tackling each other and challenges and all of that. And then once you look at once you hit merge, I think because it's a longer game, you don't have to prioritize taking out challenge threats in Australian Survivor to the same extent that you do in US Survivor, especially if you look at the modern game, right? You look at like what Rachel did, for example. If you're merging it 13, 11, 12, whatever. Mm-hmm. 12.
Whatever mergatory
is,
right?
Whatever merge, yeah, whenever abouts you're merging, you've got however many rounds, and then you can play an idle at 5, and then it's fire at 4, and then it's the final 3, right? You actually don't, and this is part of like taking out big threats in general, but the physical people especially suffer from this. You don't have that many opportunities to take out a big physical threat in US Survivor. In Australian Survivor, it's such a long game. You've got so many opportunities, especially if you're looking at a final 2, like you have loads of opportunities. And additionally, you know that the final immunity challenge is usually an endurance challenge, which is one that those really big physical threats actually aren't that good at a lot of the time, versus US, if you've got some motion or if you've got an obstacle course or something like that, a lot of the time those big athlete guys are going to be better at that. And so in Australian Survivor, there's just not that priority to take out the big guys in the same way that there is in US Survivor. Like if you look at Dave Genet's second season, his winning season, for example, he wasn't the big challenge competitor in that season, the big challenge threat. It was actually Brooke. Brooke broke the record for most challenge wins with like 4 or 5, no, with 5, I think it was. And so he's this massive, he's this incredibly fit, incredibly athletic guy, but he only won a couple of challenges, immunity challenges in that season. It was actually Brooke that was the big threat there. And so these bigger guys that in US Survivor get sniped a lot earlier, they can make it a lot further.
And I think he had 4 from McKenna's findings over here. He only won 4 individual immunities in his 2 seasons, David. And yeah. And so that is an interesting, I mean, what did Caitlin win on yours? Was it 6? Did he get all 6?
7. Yeah, 7. But I think that was a little bit different because I think we definitely thinned out the herd a bit for challenge threats. Mm-hmm. And so we probably had a weaker set of challenge threats. And also there were quite a few people who definitely weren't putting their all in a lot of challenges, especially some of Caitlin's earlier on. There are a lot of people who weren't kind of putting 100% in there. Mm-hmm. And also Caitlin is just absolutely cracked as a human. But then the other thing as well is you've got people like AJ and I on our season who we weren't afraid to have like a challenge threat go deep into the game with us. And in our minds, we don't really care about having a challenge threat in. We're just going to play around it essentially. Versus I think a lot of people don't have that mentality, especially in US Survivor, where it's okay, big challenge threat, just got to get them out.
Yeah. I've been saying that, like, if why not keep the challenge threat around? If they're in your alliance and they're winning immunity, that means the other side isn't winning immunity, and you can just, you know, take out and strategically plan how you want to do it.
Yeah. So,
but that being said, going back to the format, it'll be interesting to see what they do here, because that'll flip back in Australia versus World, because we're actually back to a smaller, shorter game. So it's going to be more like US Survivor. Yeah. There's no final 4 fire making, which I think is a big part, and we don't know whether it's a final 3 or final 2. But being a shorter game, there will be less opportunity to take out these threats. But also, you have to be thinking that a lot of these people, like that. There's a lot of really big egos on this cast, and I think that there's a lot of people who aren't going to be afraid to go up against people who are really big challenge competitors, whether it be in the challenge or just in the strategic side of the game later on down. So I it'll be very interesting to see whether they do kind of lean back towards the US, take out the challenge threats, or whether they just are fine with it and just roll with it.
And you look at somebody like George, who is notoriously terrible at challenges, right? That's kind of his shtick. In so many challenges, he's stopping to have conversations with people rather than actually competing. Like,
I bet he has 0.20 of a individual immunity win because he has 1/5 of a challenge win in the individual stage.
There you go.
Like, he's got a reward win as well, to be fair. He's got a reward win.
I was just counting immunity. But
to be fair, and he also played 94 days before being voted out. So,
and,
you know.
And one more thing about George, though. He did have a dislocated shoulder for a lot of for Heroes versus Villains. So he dislocated his shoulder in the first challenge. So apparently he was in much better shape in Heroes versus Villains. He's still not he's not a gifted athlete or anything, but apparently he was in better shape in Heroes versus Villains.
Because I was I was wondering that too, because I know he hurt his head and his neck, but I didn't realize he dislocated
his shoulder. Yeah. Wow. But it is actually interesting when you look at this cast, there is some really clear, like usually you have a really broad range of different challenge abilities, like kind of a spectrum. While here there's some, you've really just got like big guys, kind of skinny fit people, and then people who are just not very good at challenges, right? Like there's just these really clear buckets. Like you got people like George and Suri who are probably in no scenario winning a challenge. Then you've got like your basket of big muscle bros, and then you've got all your like fit at lean athlete people essentially. And there's really, and it's going to be interesting to see how this basket, the less, the kind of the Georges, the Janine's probably in that as well, Suri, these much weaker like challenge threats, how they deal with having some like incredibly strong challenge threats in the game, who, as opposed to usually where there's a bit more fluidity in how good people are at challenges, these guys really have no chance of beating some of these other guys at individual challenges.
And Phil and I have talked a lot about like the Australian Survivor challenges, that they take US Survivor challenges and just upscale it.
Yeah, so
With having to deal with something on just a much grander scale, being like, oh yeah, I experienced this challenge, but wait, everything is 10 times heavier, 10 times bigger. So it's definitely going to be a switch for them. And we don't know much about the world game and how, if it's close to this at all.
And I wonder, I you bring that point up, McKenna. I wonder how much this will affect the survivors, because really the survivors who are playing from the US is what I should preface with that, because I'm saying the survivors, if the US ones are the only ones. But with the US survivors, Tony, Parvati, Suri, yes, Suri is coming out to play 50, but Suri hasn't actually played since season 34. Tony and Parvati both haven't played since season 40. They were still playing when it was kind of head-to-head challenges, right? Whereas if you were taking New Era people, they've only played in this three tribe format, and the three tribe start is, it leads to challenges that are so much different than what you see in Australian Survivor. Will, who does like a lot of our US coverage, he worked on US Survivor for a while, and he worked in the challenge department, and one of his things that he always says is, well, you're not going to really get physical challenges or anything like that when it's three tribes, because you don't have that head to head. You're not gonna be ripping somebody off a pole, because there's three different things. So that's why it becomes more of do an obstacle course, swim, do a puzzle, rather than anything else. But I don't think this will actually be that much of a detriment for Tony, for Parvati, or for Suri, because they haven't really played what we're used to seeing the challenges be now in US Survivor. They are a little bit more used to what you're seeing in Australia.
Yeah. I think it'll still be a little bit surprising, just because Australian Survivor with the challenges, one thing they love to emphasize is the contact. And I know US Survivor, like old school US Survivor, had contact challenges, but Australian Survivor loves that like rugby shot of two. Like you had loads of analysis every time Karen did a challenge against anyone, or Noonan, and like them just whacking each other. Like Australian Survivor loves those, just the brutal physical contact stuff. And that might be a little bit of a surprise for some of the US, and even, I don't know about the other international people, but at least the US people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, Suri and Parvati have definitely gotten physical, but Tony kind of is of the era that was starting to not get as physical. And also like all three of the US survivors, they started on either four or three tribes in their first season too. So starting off as two tribes might be slightly newer, but they have come for subsequent seasons that have two tribes, but it'll be interesting to see how they navigate the game format too.
Yeah. So let's talk about that tribe a little bit more in depth here, because we've obviously talked about the Australians, and we're going to talk about, you know, we'll keep talking about where we think people are going to work and everything, but let's actually talk about this. So Parvati, Suri, Tony, they're coming in with huge targets. Everybody knows who they are, right? But then when you do look, McKenna brought this up, Cass finished second, Rob finished first, Tommy finished second, and Lisa finished first. So you're talking, they're putting players out there who might in name not be as big of targets, right? They might not have hit that legendary status just because the audience is smaller for them than for others. But I think Australian Survivor did a very good job here of casting this as well, where they're saying, look, Suri, everybody on your tribe actually has a better placement than you. You've never made a final tribal, your best placement is third. Everybody else on your season's either a winner or a runner-up, or in the case of Parvati, both. So I think they did a good job of that, but do you think that the world people are going to bond together? Or do you think that one of the world people is going to say, hey, I finished second last time. My best chance is to work with these big targets and use them as shields. Or even I won last time and my best chance is to work with these shields.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's a really interesting part. Like, you look at someone like Rob Bentele, for example, from South Africa, there are people who would say that he's got like the best winning game of any international Survivor season, right? Like it, like his game is kind of comparable to kind of Rob Mariano, like Boston Rob's Redemption Island game, that kind of just complete control dominance thing. And they're actually quite comparable in how they play. And it'll be that. And so if some of these guys have done their research coming into this, then he will actually be going in with a big threat level on his back as well, if anyone's done any research. Even someone like Lisa from New Zealand, my understanding is that she played a fantastic game and she's a really big fan as well. And so there's no kind of easy, there's nobody out there who is just kind of a lower tier kind of just potential to slide along. And then as well, the other thing they have to factor in is the fandom aspect. And it'll be interesting to see how this play, because my understanding is that Lisa, for example, is a really big Survivor fan. I don't know about the other three world guys, but I know Lisa from New Zealand is a big, like, super fan by all accounts. Because I know, like, if I were going out and I was on a tribe with Parvati, Sari, and Tony, my first instinct would be like, God, I want to play with Parvati, Sari, and Tony. And so it'll be very interesting to see if they can potentially utilize that allure of playing with the big guns, the people that everyone dreams of playing with, and are able to kind of manipulate some of these guys who, while they're winners of their own season, you know, their seasons just don't carry the same level of status as these big US players do. And there's the potential there that I think some of the other players could kind of get a bit starry, doe-eyed with the idea of playing with these really big US players.
And Sari and Parvati have navigated that fandom aspect too in fans versus favorites. So yeah. They have
and traders as well for both of them. Yeah,
right.
That's true.
So there's that they have underneath their belt to be like, oh yeah, you know, you watched me play and, you know, let's talk about, you know, whatever, because unlike like Deal or No Deal Island, Parvati is not trying to hide that she did great on Survivor. And they could use that allure to get someone over. I wouldn't put it past them, but I think with this world tribe, honestly, we might have someone from some of the international seasons that we haven't seen win because they are such an unknown to people. I feel a lot of people know Australian Survivor, they know US Survivor, and maybe a little bit of South Africa. But other than that, I feel like not many people are watching Survivor Finland.
Yeah.
I didn't know Survivor Finland was a thing until I saw Tommy on this season. And I've known about Survivor South Africa. I just haven't watched it. I've known about Australian Survivor. It just took me a while to get started on it. Survivor Finland, I had no idea that that was a thing.
Yeah, neither. And yeah, it will be interesting to see if maybe some of those more obscure international players can slide under the radar a bit. Because I also do think that this season is going to be defined by like ego, in that, like, yeah, you see it in any Survivor season. Like, you can see it in my season a lot. You can see it in any returnee season. In general, reality TV, lots of big, like, I'm a big ego, for example. I've got a very big ego. A lot of people who are on reality TV have big egos. Everyone thinks that they're really, like, fantastic. And if you look at this season, like, usually people would be scared of, like, you're looking at someone like Tony or like someone like Parvati and you're like, God, that's a scary premise. But you think, like, for example, Luke Tokey is scared of going up against Parvati, right? Like, no, he's not. Like, should he be? Maybe. But Luke Tokey's not going to be scared. Do you think George is scared of going up against Sari? Do you think Rob Bentele is scared of going up against Shawnee or George? Like, the fact is, it's really interesting Like, these are guys who not only are like incredible survivor players, but they all know that they're incredible survivor players. And I do think that it'll be interesting to see whether we do get the classic kind of take out big threats thing. When how do you even define a big threat here? Yeah. And everyone, the thing is, everyone coming into this, I don't know if there's anyone coming into this besides maybe Sarah and Janine who'd be looking at this cast and thinking, I'm not a big threat, right? Like, everyone, George is going to be thinking he's a big threat. Shawnee's going to be thinking she's a big threat. And so it will very much surprise me if kind of protect the big threats kind of thread doesn't start getting going. Because the international guys, even though they might know they're not as prominent, this Rob Bentele has been touted as one of the best players in South Africa. So he's thinking, I'm a big threat. I've got to keep the big threats around, right? Lisa came first in New Zealand and is touted as one of the best New Zealand players. She's going to be thinking, I'm a big threat. I've got to keep the big threats around. Like, everyone, if everyone's so confident in their own game, like, I don't think there's necessarily going to be this take out this big threat mentality that often occurs in these returnee seasons, because everyone thinks they're the big threat.
Yeah, and to get into who's fans of the show, so who will really know, like, and maybe fall into what you're saying, if I'd rather play with these people than get rid of them. Hrovje here says Cassandra and Tommy are apparently big fans too.
Oh, yeah.
Only Rob really isn't. Jairo D. Garcia says Lisa's the fan of RHAP back then. So it seems like they did pick a lot of people there. And Miles, like, your point exactly, when I saw this cast originally, I said, okay, good for Sarah coming back. But I said, Sarah's kind of got like the Courtney Yates vibe to her when Courtney Yates came back for Heroes versus Villains, where it's like, doesn't really fit. Like, obviously Courtney finished second, Sarah finished eighth, but it just feels like from one standpoint, you sit there and you say, man, she like almost feels like she got lucky the first time. How is she going to do this a second time? And with Sarah, it's, she finished eighth place. She's not going to have much of a target on her back when she comes into this. And she's played with a lot of the people who are out there. But then I start to look at it and I say, but if you're George and if you're David, even if you know Sarah and even if you like Sarah, part of you might say, she's actually the biggest threat to my game because nobody's looking at her as a threat. So let's get rid of her and let's make her the easy vote so I don't have to worry about that.
Don't do that. Don't you dare make that a world that we live in. Sarah is like my Parvati of AU. So like... Yeah. Having
actually, same. Sarah's one of my favorite players as well.
Having both of them on the same season, my heart is torn, but I do have to go with Parvati for my winner of this season. It's not going to happen, but I'm going to believe.
Yeah, and I think something else, I think if I had to guess what it's going to come down to, kind of what the theme is for the early voting and how the alliances get structured, I think it's interesting to think about this as the crazies versus, like, everyone's these big confident threats, but it's the crazies versus the not crazies, right? Mm-hmm. Because if you look at, say, Parvati versus Tony, for example, they're both huge threats. They're both fantastic players. They're both huge survivor characters, but Parvati is pretty measured. While I'd say Tony's a little bit crazy. He's got that bit of craziness in him. If you look at like our season, for example, you look at someone like Logan versus people like AJ and I put AJ and I in the crazy basket. I put Logan in like the quite more like measured basket. Like, George is the obvious person in the crazy, but even I'd put people like David and Luke. I do think that some of these, even though everyone's a big ego, everyone's a big threat. What I reckon people will potentially be looking at coming into it is, we want to get out A, the camera hogs, B, the disruptors, like the people who will just absolutely blow up people's games, right? And C, the unpredictable people, right? And that is that, those three things, that's the crazies. That's the Georges, Lukes, Davids, Tony. I don't know about the international guys, but potentially Rob, because I know Rob's a big personality, and I know he rubbed a lot of people the wrong way on his season who were in the minority of his alliance. So it'll be very interesting to see whether, like, you've got people like Shawnee and Parvati and others who have in the past kind of manipulated the more crazy people to try and work with and use them as shields. But there's also the potential that these guys are coming in here and just being like, oh God, I don't want to work with, I don't want to have Tony running around on the beach. I don't want to have George running around on the beach, right? Like, you know, David's there and he's in his confessionals calling himself the Golden God. Like, and I know because this happened to me on my season where people were like, God, like, even though getting out Miles isn't necessarily the best strategic move as far as the, like, where everyone's placed, it's like, God, having to play with Miles is a nightmare. Let's just get him out, right? Mm-hmm. And I do think that potentially early, when you're looking at who the easy votes are, the easy votes will potentially fall to the crazies, as I've labeled them. Yeah. Again, me putting myself in that basket as far as general player archetypes.
So someone we haven't talked about is Kirby. And from what you have been describing about as the crazies, I definitely feel Kirby is not.
Kirby's the opposite. Kirby's the absolute opposite. Yeah.
So it'll be really interesting to watch her navigate a lot of these big egos because she had to deal with Ferris in her season. And I feel like she got a pretty good amount of prep dealing with him going into this season. So I think her chances are really good as well.
Yeah, and Kirby's an interesting one because, A, I actually think potentially having no connections could work in her favor, where I think a lot of people aren't necessarily going to be, like, especially if she manages to make it to merge, there's the potential that she just manages to slide through because everyone will be looking at, look at that alliance over there, look at that alliance, that duo, that trio, whatever. And Kirby, I've met Kirby a couple of times. Kirby's magnetic. Like, her social game, like, Titans vs. Rebels, you can see it. Everyone loves Kirby. All season, everyone loves Kirby. She's the big threat. Having met her, I get it. She's just got this, like, absolutely magnetic personality. And so, kind of similar to someone like a Shawnee, she's someone that you could just see kind of skating through. And if she manages to make it to merge and can kind of sit in the middle of a couple of different factions, could make it very deep by just being very likable and making the right moves.
Hiro mentions here that he thinks Kirby is the Sarah Lucina archetype, and I actually think that's a pretty good comparison with those that haven't seen Titans versus Rebels. I think she does play a decently fluid game, and it's similar, I think, to Sarah Lucina's Game Changers game.
Mm-hmm. Potentially. What the one thing I differentiate there is that I think Sarah is more comfortable I haven't seen Game Changers, but I have seen her other two seasons and I know what happens in Game Changers. I feel like Sarah seems more comfortable being in the shadows a bit more. And while Kirby definitely will take a step back and sit in the shadows for a little bit, she does like having a lot of control. Like in Titans versus Rebels, consistently throughout the game, she'll give up control for a couple of votes where she'll let someone else kind of be in charge for a bit. But then she likes to grab control and likes to put her stamp on the game. And it'll be very interesting to see how she, like, she didn't seem to like dealing with other really big personalities on Titans versus Rebels. And it'll be really interesting to see how she deals with all of these control freaks. And to be honest, that's something I'm really excited about, especially on the Australia tribe. And just in general, is that you've got so many control freaks on this season, right? Like Dave Janae has to be in control. Like Luke needs to be in control. George needs to be in control. Like Kirby is someone who more low key, but does like to maintain a lot of control. There's a lot of people. There's not that many people who like to play more under the radar games, especially on this Australia tribe. Like there's a lot of people that really just like having a lot of control.
Yeah. And like, I think that's a fair assessment there when you talk about Sarah, because Sarah's always worked with bigger personalities. I'm talking about Sarah listening here. Like she did that with Brad in Game Changers. She was willing to sit there and work with him throughout the game, work with Ty throughout the game, right? She's kind of like Kyle from 48, where it's, I'll wait until the right time to make my move. She made the mistake in Kageyan of trying to make a move too early and thinking she had all the power and then getting blindsided. And so, yeah, I mean, I haven't seen Titans versus Rebels yet, so I don't know exactly what Kirby's going to do.
Kirby's is very different. Kirby's game in Titans versus Rebels actually is not in the way it's presented, but if you look at the strategy of it, it's somewhat comparable to Tony's in that it's like she's just constantly like doing things and then getting away with it, if that makes sense, right? Like a lot of the people who are watching the season are going, how is Kirby able to keep pulling all of this stuff off? And that's very different to the Sarah game, which is the kind of hiding in the shadows thing.
So I want to go to your point about confessional counts here. and yeah. being screen hog and things like that. So the biggest one that stands out to me is David, like you talked about. And I don't know how accurate these numbers are because I normally don't look at these till after because I'm trying not to. I was trying not to be spoiled on the season since I was watching Australian Survivor. Yeah. And then I would look after and I'm like, really? Are those right? And you get like some conflicting reports here with Australian yeah. compared to the US where it seems like there's like one source that everybody goes with. But looking at David in Survivor, yeah. Australian Survivor All-Stars, 164 confessionals. The next highest was 89. So, and he's coming off of Deal or No Deal Island, where you know he is staying very much in the know. Now, I'm assuming everybody kind of knew he was going out to do Deal or No Deal Island, even if they didn't see him play it yet. But I think that maybe it wasn't as well known as I think. But
I'm not sure. I've got no idea, to be honest.
Do you think that does ring true and David's now in trouble? Because you're talking about he's going to have these Golden God confessionals where they're just going to keep airing that over and over and over and over again. If you're Luke, who was once the dominant person, or if you're Shawnee, who's used to getting her screen time, or you're George, who's used to getting your screen time, are you looking at that saying, I want to be the star of AU versus the world, so let's just vote David out first. Plus, he already won. Screw this guy.
Yeah, potentially. Like, that's very much something I'm thinking about, especially looking at David and George, because if I'm correct, I'm pretty sure George actually has more confessionals than David in both of his seasons. But I could be wrong about it. I know that David and George are basically just in a league of their own for confessional leaders.
You have King George and the Golden God. Like, I mean, they yeah. keep it themselves very big names.
Yeah, but I'm sure that there are probably people thinking about that. Like, shamefully, it's probably something that I'd be thinking about, like, on a season, especially maybe not on just a normal season, because potentially if it's just one of them, like if you're Luke and you're with Dave, like he was in Champions vs. Contenders 2, you're potentially looking at that and like, okay, I'm all right. Like, I'm a big enough personality that either he can have the majority and I'll be second, or I'll have more than him because I think I'm going to play a bigger game or whatever. But when you've got so many of these guys, and especially George and David as a combination, where the two of them are such big camera hogs, like, you know, I'm sure that there's people there, especially with the amount of egos on that season, that are thinking about that. And because also you've got to think about the fact that for like a lot of these people, Survivor or like entertainment-y stuff is kind of their job. Right? Like, as much as winning the prize at the end is a factor, what also is a factor is I need to get on screen so I can be the center of attention and then I can get booked for more shows, or I can sell merch, or I can do this, or I can do that. And so it is something that probably not all of them, I'm sure Janine Ellis doesn't care about like how many confessionals she's getting. I'm sure there are lots of other people that don't really care. Like, Shawnee probably doesn't care. She rode with George for the whole Heroes versus Villains. But I would be very surprised if there weren't people there. And it's not just about the confessionals either. It's about, like, if you're with George, for example, George is always going to be like the center of attention, both from the confessionals perspective, but also from the strategy. Like, whilst George is in the game, the strategy is always going to revolve around what you're doing with George, right? And that's really frustrating to have to play around someone who's just like such a strategic magnet like that, where it's always revolving around them. And again, this is something that I had in my season where, like, if you've got this person that is just an immovable strategic object that is just a hassle for everyone's game to have to play around, then it may just be the right play to just bin them. And that's what people were trying to do to me, because people were like, God, working Miles and AJ, but Miles especially, is just such a pain in the ass to play mm-hmm. around, because it makes every single vote kind of about him, or he has to be kind of in playing every single vote hard.
Well, and I think that's a fair point, because yeah, David did beat George out in confessionals. George had 155 and 160. David had 164. So barely beats him out, but still astronomical numbers, right? But the one thing that George does that David doesn't do is George owns every tribal he's at as well.
So exactly.
Get confessionals at tribal council. But going to your point, it's like, you know that if you're going into a tribal council with George, George is going to try to do something that's going to cause chaos. I mean, I'm sitting here watching Heroes Villains and I'm like, is Flick really going to throw the idol that she doesn't realize isn't an idol into the fire? Is she really going to do that? Because George kind of fits into Russell Hance, but I think George is like a little bit more normal, but it's like he fits into the Russell Hance element of things, where he's so chaotic and so crazy. But if you stay loyal to him, as loyal as he wants to be to you, he won't turn on you. Like, he is willing, yeah, as totally. Long as you're willing to stay with him, to go far. So when he's saying that to Flick and he's saying, throw that in the fire, come over, talk to us, you've just set yourself up for the second part of the game. You're sitting there saying, you're making a deal with the devil, but the devil's going to have your back for a little bit. Like, the devil's not just going to kill you right away. He's going to use you as long as he needs to. And so I do wonder if that'll be able to work out, or if some of these players, Miles, to your point, are just going to say, enough with George's shenanigans. I'm the star. I'm the captain now. Get out of here. I don't need you. And they send George packing early. I mean, in your opinion, who do you think is the first boot from the Australian Survivor tribe?
George. Like, I'd put money that it's George. Like, obviously, you never know, but George is the most obvious one. Like, I would say George is the obvious one, and then the other people that I think would potentially be in contention would be, like, would be David, Luke, if they're going down the, like, get out big characters route. Potentially Shawnee, because she's not that well connected. But I think Shawnee will be all right, at least for like a vote or two. Or the other one would be potentially someone like Sarah.
Well, she needs to survive three.
But potentially Sarah would be the other one. But there's no, like, George is just the obvious one. Like, it's the easy answer, but it's hard to see how George survives any trials, to be honest.
So then my question to you would be, if George is able to create chaos and do his psychotic stuff that he seems to be able to do no matter what, who does he target? Like, if he has an idol, who do you think George is most focused on coming in? Because you know that
David and Luke. David and Luke. George's whole career, he likes to take out the big alpha bros. He hates playing with the big attention seeking alpha bros, and he likes to take him out. And he's looking, I'm sure he's looking at David and Luke and going, like, get. And especially because, again, if you're looking at this whole screen time thing, like, David and Luke are the two guys on that tribe who are going to also be the his competition for attention whores, essentially. But but also, just from, as I said, David and Luke are in this, if you look at the dynamics of the tribe, David and Luke are kind of in the middle as far as the pregame connections as well. But they just fit the archetype of the type of people that George generally likes to take out, which is big alpha bros.
And I think it would be David over Luke, because Luke's a little bit more goofy than David is, in my opinion. So, like, David fits the structure of, like, alpha male the most.
And I think it'd be easier to paint a target on David's back as well than Luke. Like, Luke is better connected than David is in this cast, and also he's not got the winner thing. Like, David is considered the best player Australian Survivor player to ever play, and so that is, if George is like, I'm getting a lot of heat, potentially the way to get it off is, but we have the best Australian Survivor player to ever play over here.
Well, that George needs to admit it, because I think about that confessional that David had in Deal or No Deal Island. And Miles, I know we were talking before, and you were like, I didn't really watch Deal or No Deal. I don't know if that's, like, supposed to be public knowledge, but when I was watching that, he has a confessional early on where he says, there are parts of the internet that think I'm the best player of all time.
I have seen that confessional, yeah.
And the internet exploded. Oh, David's not this, David's not that. And it's really ironic, because I don't know how I timed this out so well, but I literally timed this out. We're on our Patreon. We're doing Heroes versus Villains for US, and I'm watching AU Heroes versus Villains. When Deal or No Deal Island was on, I happened to be watching All Stars at the same time.
Yeah.
And so after David's first season, I'm like, yeah, he's not that good. Like, you know, whatever. He's just your typical good personality, fun guy, but, like, he didn't do that much. And then he comes out that second season with a pretty solid target on his back. And he navigated that game so well that I started to say, okay, I could understand why people would say this, because David was truly one of the first, other than Tony, but Tony was now playing his third time. David was one of the first true All-Stars to return and win an All-Star season, right?
Yeah.
In the US version, Amber wasn't an All-Star. It's going to hurt people, but Sandra wasn't on people's radars coming into Heroes versus Villains. Sarah was not really on people's radars in Game Changers.
Jeremy had finished
11th place, though, right?
People consider Jeremy a threat, though.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So Jeremy was probably the max, and that was more of, like, on a season of pure chaos, which Sam Wandelser was, where kind of, like, the convicts started ruling, or whatever the phrase is, the patients are ruling the insane asylum. That was the Sam Wandelser vibe there. And I feel like Jeremy going out early, people saw his potential, but he still wasn't coming in with the threat level that maybe a Spencer had, even though he
wasn't the golden god.
Exactly. So I am I was genuinely so impressed that when I now look at this, I say, okay, David to me should be the first boot from that tribe.
He also has an amazing connection with Parvati too.
Yeah.
So like to have that direct connection, if there's a swap and they
might not know about that though.
They probably won't, but at the same time, it's like in my head of David is just like racking up his threat level too, but it's crazy how David's a winner and he has all these connections, but we're still talking about George and his, like him going out first. He's the one of the biggest threats on the tribe. So I think that's like a big credit to George's game too.
So we're almost at the hour mark here, so we don't have to go that much longer. You know, it's weird to be doing a podcast and being like, I have to be out soon because I have to go to work. That's like the weirdest thing, doing this AU. And I know Johnny Fairplay was doing this with Eden for like the longest time. And I'm like, how is Fairplay getting up at 6 a.m. to just be like, sure, let's go and podcast this. So I want to ask you, Miles, who are you rooting for from Australia?
Sarah. So 2017 was the first Survivor season I ever watched.
Same.
Like of any Survivor season, not just Australian, of just any. And she was one of my favorite players on that season. And also it's just great to see her play a second time, and she's a big underdog. I don't know much about her, but Lisa, being a big fan and being like from a smaller country, like I love to root for her. I love Tony, so I'd love Tony to pull out another win as well. They're probably the main ones, I think. Let me think if I've missed anyone. Oh, Shawnee. I'd love for Shawnee to pull out a win on her like fourth or fifth time playing, or however many times it is. Like, that'd be great. But definitely, if it's one person, Sarah, I'd love for Sarah to win.
Did you base your game on Tony at all?
Tony's not one of my favorite players, but I do like Tony a lot. And I do like his ethos of how he plays the game. I think, I don't know, I base my game on Tony. I think we base our games on the same thing, which are like when you get opportunities, take them, essentially. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's, if you look at Tony's games, it's when you see a move and you see a good move, you take it. You don't like back off, and you always try and like improve your positioning in your game. And I think that was a lot of my mentality playing, is never get complacent, never sit still. If you see a move that you think is going to better your game, you take it. Tony, to be fair, I've probably watched more of Tony than I have of watch, because I've watched a fair amount of US Survivor, but I haven't watched all of it. And Tony's two seasons were two of the earlier US seasons that I watched in my Survivor watching, and so definitely they influenced how I played the game.
Yeah, and the reason I asked that is just because when you brought his name up, I'm like, you played really aggressive, and he played really aggressive. You know, that was Tony's whole thing, was he can't turn off who he is. It's just, I have to play an aggressive game because that's my personality.
Yeah, I have the same thing, which is like, I can't not be kind of a little bit crazy, because that's just me. I'm just running around the island, like pissing everyone off and like being strategic and making moves. And so if you have that personality, you kind of need to just lean into it and go full tilt boogie, as Jeff would say.
There were those conversations that you and AJ would have, where it'd be like, oh, you're strategizing, okay, I'm gonna walk over here. And I was like, that just would not fly on US Survivor. Like, people would have, they would lose their minds to hear people just so openly having those discussions. So, you know, I'm wondering if, I obviously nobody saw you play before they came out, but I'm curious to see how that'll impact the next season of Australian Survivor, and if any of these US fans who come out to play 50 or anything, maybe like they watch and like, can I play like this crazy wild type game that you and AJ did? Because I think throughout the entire season, if you listen to any of our coverage, the reason you probably turned it off is because I was like, man, Miles and AJ are screwed. They have no shot.
I don't think it works. It doesn't work in the US though. Just for the structural reasons, the problem in the US is that because you have Final Four Fire Making, and because you can play an idol at 5 and you can idol at 6 and whatnot, you have to take, in US Survivor, you have to take any opportunity you have to take out a threat. You look at someone like Rachel, right? Like, there was basically no chance to take out Rachel from like 8 onwards or whatever crazy thing it was there. And so what it means is that you can't use shields in US because it's too hard to potentially get rid of them. First of all, the challenges, there's less variety in challenges. So you do have people who can just go on these crazy challenge runs in the US. If you can, you can play your idols at 5 and then fire making at 4. So you can idol your way to the end potentially. And so in Australian Survivor, you can keep AJ and Miles around, you can keep George around, you can keep Ferris and Kirby around because you've got so many opportunities to get rid of them. But in US Survivor, you don't have that. So you can't play the shield strategy in modern US Survivor in the way that you can in Australian Survivor because the game's just too short.
Yeah.
No, I love that point. And I think that's been a complaint with fire making that a lot of people have had is they
want to I hate it. Oh, yeah, I hate it. Especially the fact that you can idle your way to the end that is the really big issue for me with fire making. Fire making on its own wouldn't be an issue, but it's the fact that fire making means that you can just idle fire making like Ben did, like Rachel did to an extent, though she used immunities more. I think that's really a really big issue. Like, and it just like leaves people so little agency in the end game. Sorry, we're ranting here, but the final five and final four are such fun votes, and US Survivor just gets rid of them. Like, there's so many good Australian Survivor final four votes, and like there's US Survivor's like, okay, no, we're just gonna go make fire instead.
Yeah, and I understand like the fear for US Survivor was they were getting so many 10-0s, 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 and what was happening was, and I started to feel this too for a period, is they were hitting this point where by the time Final Tribal Council came, you could turn it off because you knew who was going to win. And
that's a casting problem. That can be fixed by casting. I think that's an issue with the fact that US Survivor casting, modern casting is quite like, it's a lot of very similar people. And especially it's a lot of like really big strategy game nerds. And the problem is that actually makes people play better, which means that it actually it just makes the game a lot more boring because everyone's kind of playing somewhat similarly. It's why someone like Q in 46 is so exciting, right? Or like Genevieve in 47, these people who play, they're bucking the trend, right? But also it didn't really work for them. But in Australian Survivor, the people who buck the trend have success. Ferris had a lot of success. Me and AJ had a lot of success. You look at George didn't win, but George in both of his seasons went incredibly far. Haley won as an incredibly dominant winner. The reason is because of the diversity in casting and diversity in game styles, right? Like Kirby and Luke, for example, they both were recruits. They weren't newbies. And so what that meant is that they came into the game. And Ferris actually didn't know the game that well either coming in. So these guys come into the game with a completely unique perspective on how to play the game.
Yeah.
Sorry, that's my little US Survivor rant.
As somebody who hasn't played that or hasn't watched all of US Survivor, I'm going to throw a name at you that you probably are going to be like, I have no clue who that person is. But from Ghost Island, Bradley Clyhe, who goes out right before the merge, I'm very good friends with him, right? Was texting him the other day. And the one thing he always said when his season got done airing was US Survivor. And this was back in season 36. So you're talking 7 years ago now. He always said US Survivor needs to start casting more Mactors again. They need to start casting some of those people who don't understand the game because the super fans want to play it the way they dream of playing it. Right? Like if I went out and played Survivor, I kind of know how I would want it to go. I would know what my ups and downs and things like that were going
to
look like.
Yeah, and everyone knows how to play as well.
Yes. Right?
Like in the modern, like everyone knows, okay, you keep your head down, you poke your head up at key times to direct the vote in a certain way, but you can't be the one at the front, but you also don't want to be on, and everyone's just trying to play the middle game in New Era Survivor.
But if you get more of those cues, And more of those people, like you're saying, maybe a little bit more of the recruits or the people who don't really know the game and are applying for different reasons, like David.
People just don't care. Like AJ and I are both big fans of the game, but both of us just didn't really care about getting voted out. So we just went out there and we're like, we're just going to have fun and be silly and just do crazy stuff.
Chrissy from Blood versus Water AU, top tier, loved her, didn't know the game. Her loved one got voted out and she goes all the way to the end and she didn't know what was going on, but like found out the game going on. And it was incredible to watch her journey. So yeah, I love the thought of bringing people who maybe don't know the structure or anything of the game.
So my question though is, did Chrissy stand out because Blood versus Water was
I don't know. That's the example that we want to use. It's one of the only Aussie seasons I haven't seen because I just
See, this is where I say all the time now, like if I can get through Blood versus Water, AU Blood versus Water, I can get through anything. Like I can survive anything. Put me on the island for 42 days with no rice, no food. And I, as long as I don't have to watch AU Blood versus Water again, I'm happy.
Like, yeah, that's where the flaws in AU casting come in, when you have too many people that don't know. Because what you need, what you actually need is people who don't know the game, but are just going to like go out and swing at it anyway, right? You like Kirby and Luke are the two best examples of people who just like didn't know the game at all. I were just like, I'm going to run this game and I'm going to blow everything up and I'm going to play really hard. That's what you need, as opposed to people who are just trying to keep their head down and whatnot.
Yeah. Yeah, the biggest problem with Blood versus Water, and I said this over on our Patreon, but the biggest problem I have with your guys' Blood versus Water compared to the US versions is they didn't do a good job of highlighting the relationships. So you were sitting there and you're like, I don't even realize who's related to who. Like, I have no Mark and Sam. Yeah, we all knew that because you guys just rammed it down our throat for 24 episodes. Like, but for everybody else, I had a hard time keeping track of who was related to who and all of that. And I think there was one grouping, one pair that might have had one confessional between the two of them. And it was just, it was chaotic and it was just a rough season. But I do understand McKenna's point there with Chrissy, where it's like, give us some people who are more personality. I mean, you think about it with US Survivor, like somebody like Carolyn from 44, who
right example
is the biggest snub ever to not be on 50, but she comes back for the traders. Everybody loves her on the trader. She's built up this massive fan base, and she's built up this massive fan base with not being a big Survivor fan. She is now, but like not being this massive over the top fan. And even though she wasn't necessarily the biggest fan coming in, or like a game bot at least, she still was willing to play the game. She's the one who put the X in the birdcage, which everybody was like, Carolyn came up with that. Carolyn's a really smart person. She just does it in a little bit different of a way. And that was fun for Survivor because we hadn't seen that in the new era. So I will say this. So I know Miles, I know who you're pulling for. McKenna, I know you got Sarah and Parvati, and that's Parvati, like, yeah. My thing is, I want the Luke win. Okay. That's who I want. I want Luke to pull it out. Miles kind of gave a face there, but I want Luke to be the one. And my reason for this is, like, when I started watching Australian Survivor, I pushed it off and pushed it off. And that's why when we do our first live season on the YouTube channel, Miles is like, you know, man, you know some stuff, but you don't know everything. And it's very clear. But the thing is, when I started watching it 2016, I was like, man, I need a character. I need a character. I need a character. And then 2017 comes and Luke was that guy. Right. And I think Luke was so fun there. And I think when he came back and played Champions versus Contenders 2, he was so much fun in that season as well.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like what you've been talking about, Miles, of you just want people who are going to have fun. You and AJ were going to have fun, and you didn't care if you went out early or anything like that. I feel like Luke is just like fun on the show. And now Hirovje is saying, oh, Phil, look up Luke's online tweets. People are no longer in that camp. Look, I don't follow
that was the face that Miles made.
So I have to preface with this, right? I got shipped with the traders when I was like, so what's Michael Rapaport do? And like everybody's like, I hate Michael Rapaport. And I'm like, why? And then I get this. I don't pay attention to the players' politics and stuff because I really wanted to keep it as I watch them on my TV screen. I try to keep them like there.
That's fair, yeah.
And then like if I have them on the podcast, I talk to them and I try not to talk. I mean, we had Sarah Lucina on the podcast during BLM and then we had Wendell like the next week. You know what I mean? So it was like two very opposite ends of the spectrum there. And, you know, it was fun though, because we were like talking Survivor and Wendell did get more into like the, you know, what was going on in the world at the time. But so sorry if that just pissed everybody off that I'm like, I want Luke. But I love Luke.
It's fair. I think it's reasonable to just watch the show, like just to watch the show as its own thing and just to enjoy it as like its own thing and not to worry about that kind of stuff too much. Like, I think that's a reasonable way to go about it, especially if like you're in the US and you're just like coming in as like a casual viewer and watching it. Like, I think that's totally reasonable.
Yeah. I try to just enjoy what's in front of me. And so for me, I want Luke to win, but now everybody's gonna be like, what the hell? But I just feel like, you know, he was fun on both seasons. He comes close. I think the story with his kids and everything.
He's a great character. Like, he's a fantastic, he's one of the best like characters, Australian Survivor characters, like in the show's history.
Yeah. And if somehow Tony were to win, like, sure, just crown him again.
I mean, there's no way, but it'd be awesome if he did.
I mean, Tony's got to be the first boot, right? Like,
I think Tony, you're looking at, on that world tribe, if it's one of the Americans, I think it's Tony. But I do think that there's a chance that the Americans kind of band together and are able to manipulate the world guys and kind of take advantage of them a little bit.
At least get one of them.
I'm really interested to see how Rob Bentele goes, because I don't know how well his... Because as I said, his whole thing was being like the Boston Rob kind of strategy. I don't know how well that kind of like control, manipulation thing goes on with very skilled returnees. Like you saw what happened with Boston Robert Winners at War. Like I don't know that necessarily works. So it's going to be really interesting to see if he can adapt his game or not. Because I do think sometimes those like winners or very dominant players who play these very successful dominant games do sometimes struggle to adapt when they're like faced with a more versatile or skilled cast. And so I'm really interested to see if Bentele can kind of adapt his game and maybe take a step back that he will need to take if he wants to do well in the game, or if he just kind of comes in all guns, like tries to take control again and you know, the rest of the tribe look at him and go like, yeah, no thank you. Because apparently like he got quite moral, like he was one of those guys who created a really good us versus them mentality and kind of brought the morality into the game and whatnot, which is something that I imagine a lot of these guys just wouldn't really want to be a part of if he tries to do it again. So it'll be interesting see how he plays it. But yeah, Tony, if one of the Americans go, I'd be looking at Tony as the obvious one there.
Yeah.
The similar reasons as George, right? Like same kind of thing.
Yeah. And I do, I think it's interesting what you're talking about with Rob, because if he did play similar to Boston Rob and Redemption Island, Boston Rob and Redemption Island, I always say like, they just gave him a win. They said, here's a bunch of players who have no idea what they're doing. I mean, they sat there and look, I love Andrea as a person, but they were like, Andrea is this great strategist. Like Andrea made 27 mistakes in 27 days and she was the biggest adversary to Rob, and that just tells you like what that cast was. Once the one tribe voted out Russell, there was nothing there. And so, you know, it but then we've seen Rob come back and try to play again and have a hard time in Winners at War because people said we're not going to put up with your shit. And I feel like this cast is going to be
Traders as well. I thought his Traders performance, as much as it was entertaining, was he had the same issues on the Traders as he had on Winners at War, right? He's kind of got one game that he knows how to play. And it'll be interesting to see whether Rob Bentele is similar to that, or he's able to be a bit more versatile.
Yeah, that's true, because Boston Rob went into Traders, and I was saying this the whole season, I feel that he had an agenda of, I want to get rid of the other Survivor players because of what happened to Winners at War, and I want to be that guy again, so that's why I'm going to boot Tony, that's why I'm going to get rid of Jeremy, like, I don't care, and it felt like that was the reason, and it was more to his detriment than to help him, so, you know, who's going to go for the scalp, and who's going to go for the win? That's the question on this season, right? Is Rob going to say, I want to get rid of Tony so I get the scalp, or is he going to say I'll play with Tony because that might be my best chance to win?
I think the scalps are going to be I think that's a great point. I think the scalping is going to be a big theme of the season. Like that's the thing, like everyone wants George's scalp, everyone wants like Dave Janae's scalp, everyone's going to want Tony's scalp. Even Parvati, I feel like, will have a like kind of like Heroes versus Villains, will have a big target on her back. Like there's these really big players that you're like, oh, I want to get that person, I want to be the one that gets that person.
Yeah So I have a random comment from you here that I want to throw up, and then we'll wrap this thing up. But I just feel like this is a fun one and a fun way to end it, Miles, since you just played and since you're so excited for this. But random YouTuber asked earlier, how would Miles feel about his own odds in a hypothetical situation that he was on this season? He's member number 8 on the Australian tribe in a 16-player season. How do you feel about your hypothetical odds with this grouping, Miles?
I would feel actually much better about playing with this group than playing in like any other sort of returnee season format, for the simple reason that if I were to play like a random All-Stars or Heroes versus something, you know, at some sort of returnee season, right? In that scenario, I'm the George. I'm the everything that we've talked about George, about why he would be the obvious first boot. That's me in that scenario. It's like, God, we just do not want to have Miles around. It's going to be a pain in the ass the whole time. Big threat to our games, big camera hog. But on that... like that's the one that this kind of format would be the one situation where I wouldn't have to worry about that. And so I would, and the one thing that I am good at is, and I had this a bit with AJ and even with some of the other like big character of the seasons, like as much as I've got a big ego and I'm a big personality, like I am very comfortable seeding control. Like I spent a lot of my game with very little control, and I'm actually quite all right with not being in control. And I think that the people who are going to get really done in on this season are the people who try and take control, right? Especially if there's anyone who's trying to take and maintain control, as opposed to just like holding, like taking control at key points and then letting it go. I think the people that try and take and maintain control for extended periods of time will potentially struggle. And that's something that I don't really struggle with. Like, I'm very comfortable ceding control. I'm very comfortable being like the second in command, because that's basically what it was to AJ. Yeah. So this kind of format would probably be the highest likelihood that I would have of succeeding and doing well. Also, like, I feel like I'd be have a better, like, possibility of winning more challenges in this kind of format as well, because it's less people, which means less competition for challenges. So you could go on a bit more of a challenge run, because I didn't really get that opportunity because we had Wonder Boy on our season. But yeah, I do think it'd still be a struggle, obviously, because you've got a lot of incredibly good players. And the thing that I'd struggle with on a format like this is that one thing I was very lucky about in my season is because we had a lot of people who had very bad social games, whose social games were like much worse than mine, because my social game isn't fantastic. In this kind of format, everyone's got a pretty, like, everyone out there has a pretty good social game there. Yeah. Like, there's not anyone who's got a bad social game. So there's no, like, on our season, we had like Kent, Indy, Ali, these people who just kind of ended up like blowing up, and then I was able to kind of scoot on by. You got none of those kind of people, so there's no room for error in that regard. And so it's a question of whether my probably weaker social game than a lot of these people would be outweighed by my willingness to be a much more malleable number than I think some of these people, where I would be a lot more useful for people than, say, a George or a Dave Genet, who you'd be like, God, that do not want to work. Like, probably don't want to work that much with Miles. Miles, he's still able to be chill, while George and David, like, they're going to just be around blowing shit up, you know? Yeah. So I think like, I'd actually have a better chance in this than I would in it. Because I do think if I were to play again in a normal season, I'd probably face the issues we've discussed about George would probably be the same issues that I would run into. But yeah, who knows?
So I want to ask that. Is the general consensus that George would have won Heroes Villains if he got to the end, or no?
Yes, but it depends. If he's up, my understanding is that against Jerry and Matt, he just flogs them. My understanding is against Liz has a chance, but it's still probably George.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that does speak to how his social game got better, because obviously, I mean, yeah, Haley dominated that first break.
Well, there were still people. The reason why there was a potential for Liz is because there were still people on that jury who really didn't want to vote for George. Mm-hmm. My understanding was that a few of the heroes were really anti-George, guys like Sean and Sam. Simon, I think, was on the fence with regards to whether he'd vote for, like, in a deep dive, he mentioned that he was like 50-50 on voting George or Liz. Like, he wasn't sure. Like, I think that there were still people that he really pissed off. And I also do think that you're looking at the three people at Final Four who were probably post-merge the three biggest, like, goats, essentially. Yeah. Left. And like, I love Liz's game. And honestly, I think Matt Sharp's game is super underrated as well. But as far as jury perception, they're probably the three biggest goats left in the game. And so it's kind of the Boston Rob Redemption Island thing, where it's like, yeah, if George were to get there, where it's like, yeah, he's winning, but he's winning against the most disliked people on the cast from a jury perspective, essentially.
So I guess that's the question then, is does George actually have people he could sit next to on the season? Because you're talking about the social games and everything, and it's like, well, somebody has to have the 14th best social game. It's probably George, right?
Yeah, but I'd say probably George. It'll be interesting to see. I haven't watched their season, but I think you could potentially see Rob Bentele up there as well, just based on what I read about his, because I've read a fair amount about his season, and I think some of the stuff that worked for him on his season would potentially not work very well on this season. But I do also think that for people like Sari and George, they've got a higher possibility of winning this season than they would have any other season, because usually, like, Sari's problem, the reason why Sari will probably never win is because she's at this stage, she's such a big name, such a big threat, that you can just never let her to the end, and she's bad challenges, so she just always will go out 5, 6, 7, 8 if she makes it deep into the game. George kind of faces the same issue, but this is a cast of people that could potentially sit next to George, or sit, or at least feel comfortable sitting next to George, or feel comfortable sitting next to Sari or someone like that, who maybe not as good at challenges.
Yeah, so I think that's pretty much all we have here. I mean, I feel like you've covered everything really well. And I think you're right about Sari there, by the way, because when you talk about Sari, I keep saying she's got a really good chance to go deep on 50.
This is her best chance, I think, of any. This is her best chance to win that she will ever have again.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I think coming into 50, she's already drawing dead, and I'm saying she probably has no chance. And people are like, no, if she gets there, I'm like,
she could go deep. She could go deep. Like, in fact, she's the perfect shield. Like, Suri is the perfect shield in that, like, she's not going to win challenges. And so you take her, she's always a big threat, and then you cut her at 7-6-5.
Yeah, yeah. So, all right, is there anything else about this cast or anything like that, Miles? You're hinting that you're ready to play again. You're already kind of lowering your threat level here by saying,
not necessarily. Hey, it's one of those things where unlike I think a lot of people, when they leave the game, they feel like they've got unfinished business. They got like stuff to tick off their bucket list. I feel pretty content because I feel like I like ticked everything off my bucket list. And all my business is finished. And you know, there's the only way to go is down. Yeah. But I'd potentially play again. But it's one of those things where it's like, who knows? Like, it'd be right circumstance. It depends what's happening in life and whatnot. But obviously, I really love the game and I enjoy the game as well. But it's one of those. It's actually one of the pleasures of winning is that I don't have that like, God, I just want to go out and play again. It's like, okay, I can kind of do it on my own terms, if that makes sense.
And I think it makes sense for you too, because I feel like your win is pretty well respected in the community. So that has to help.
Only
too,
way right? to go is death.
I think you definitely benefit from an all returnee season versus like the half seasons that we've seen, where I think you were, like you were talking about before, would hit that. Miles has to go.
Yeah. And I mean, because I always love Michelle Fitzgerald, and like, you know, coming out of Ko-Rong, everybody's like, well, she should have lost to Aubrey. So then Michelle has that desire to play again and kind of prove herself. I feel like with you, Miles, it's like, no, you're good. Like, and nobody's sitting here saying,
I've found and played four idols. Like, I'm never going to beat that. I'm never going to top the crazy. Like, I'm never going to top the craziness of my game.
Yeah. No, I totally, totally agree with that. So, well, this was a lot of fun. I'm glad we did this. Now, my last question. Last one, I swear. Do you know what day this starts? Because you're in Australia, and I feel like here in the US, we have no idea what day the season is starting.
No, we still don't have a date.
Yeah, so, that's what I thought.
Yeah, I think it'll be like sometime in July. I definitely don't think it's June. But yeah, we still don't have a date. We don't have it in our TV guides or anything. Like, I've got no idea what's. But also, I haven't been like scraping, trying to figure out when it is or anything. But yeah, I've got no idea.
Because there was the rumor it was going to be June 22nd. And then I don't know who started that rumor. And then it was like,
I think one of the players said June 22nd and they were just wrong. I feel like Parvati said it or something, but I can't remember where, but yeah, I got no idea.
Well, thanks for nothing there. I was hoping that you would know, you know, because here it's like, you know, we're going to watch it the next morning anyway. So I have no idea. They just tell me and I'm okay, great. I'll watch it the next morning. But it's fascinating that it's somebody said, Hirovje here says it starts after MasterChef ends, which is the last week of July, first week of
August. Oh, okay. Cool.
We'll see how that goes. But Miles, thank you so much for jumping on. I really appreciate this. And I love having you here. Is there anywhere people should follow you, do any of that fun stuff? You got anything cool going on that you want people to know about?
Yeah, just like Instagram and Twitter. Like Instagram, I do more kind of general, just like silly. Well, Instagram and TikTok, I do like reels and TikToks and whatnot. It's just silly stuff. And then Twitter, if you want more Survivor stuff, like if you want my Survivor thoughts, Twitter is where the Survivor thoughts go. So if you want to hear more of me like ranting about US Survivor or whatever, like Twitter is the place to find me. It's just, I think it's Miles M. Qua on Twitter and then just Miles Qua on Instagram.
Yeah, there is a Miles Qua who doesn't have the M, just so everybody knows that's not Miles.
That's an old account that I made like a decade ago, and then I lost all the account details for or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's a random follow picture. It. Nobody will post.
Yeah. I tried to add it the other day, and then it was like, it had like, I don't know, like 30 followers or something. I'm like, maybe I shouldn't add that one. I don't think that's him. That's not the winner of an Australian Survivor season. Come on. But, Well, everybody else, thank you so much for listening. Make sure you like this video and subscribe to the channel. We got plenty of Survivor 50 coverage that we're doing. We've been putting out defining episodes for all of the players who are on there. We just did Kyle's yesterday. We did Jenna's first. And we're going to be having...
What was Kyle's defining episode?
The Shaheen boot.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
That's what we had to go with. We got Colby coming out on Friday, and we're kind of going back and forth. We're doing the early, then the latest, then the early, then the latest. So it'll go Colby and then Camilla, and we're working our way through that way. And then we're also
who are you two going for on Survivor 50? Sorry, my turn to ask a question.
No, you're good.
Almost excited to see out there.
Colby for me, because I was 9 years old the first time he played, and that was the first season I watched. I started on the second episode of Australia. And so for me, like being a young kid who was really into sports and all that, Colby was the one that I wanted to be when I get older. You know what I mean? Like that's where I went. And so I just loved him. My family loved him. And then I loved him on All-Stars. I just rewatched Heroes versus Villains. And honestly, I think he's so much more fun than people give him credit
for. I agree. That's my hot take. He's fun because he's so flat. Like, if that makes sense. Mm. Like, it's actually entertaining how flat he is all season.
Yeah. And he would have won the season if he sat at Final Three, which people don't want to admit. But it's like, no, all of the heroes would have just been like, sure, we're voting for Colby. He's got four votes. He needs one more against Jerry or Sandra or Parv or Russell, he gets that vote. So
he played better than people think as well.
He did. He really did. Miles, we're gonna have you on podcast again. You've earned your earned your spot back, because I've been saying that and people are like, you're an idiot. I'm like, no, he really was. I mean, he played the game the whole time. He just was dealt a bad hand of cards. But that's who I'm most excited for the nostalgia factor. In terms of who I think is going to win, I actually think Rick Devins is probably going to win. Because I think I feel like he has no threat level.
No, are you kidding?
Wow.
He's got the George Miles issue, the Tony issue of like, who wants to play with the guy who's running around and finding 1,000 idols and blowing everything up and screen hog.
Oh, but the screen hog thing is what I think of more. I just feel like with Rick, it's like, he's a nice guy. He's got like kind of like that personality where he can get along with anybody. And then I look at it and when I sit there and I say, who actually had a chance to win? He's the fourth person voted out of his season. Like people forget that happened. Like,
no, no one cares about that. No one cares about that.
No, it's what happens after he's the fourth person.
Yeah, that is true.
That man found the most idols in the history of International Survivor tied. We all know that idol play is the highest form of gameplay, which makes him the biggest threat in the game, obviously.
I love where your head's at on this and your very unbiased opinion.
In my opinion, Rick Devins is one of the greatest players to ever play, because
now I know why you're saying threat level and stuff, because you're over here like, no, you thought I based my game off of Tony. I based it off of Rick Devins. That was my goal. I'm either the fourth boot or I'm going to the end, baby.
To be fair, I was almost the second boot.
Yeah, that's true.
I was this close to being the second boot, 10 minutes away.
Yeah, oh, it's true.
It was that close. People don't realize how close I was to being the second boot of Brains vs. Prawns 2. I was genuinely like this close to being it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, what about you, McKenna? Who are you like excited
I'm
for?
Really looking forward to watching Jenna Lewis play. I think she has a lot of upside being out of the kind of limelight for a while. She made it all the way to third in All-Stars, and I think she's like taking notes on her game and is still like involved within Survivor and has watched Survivor a little bit past that, so I think she knows kind of what to expect going in. But I think someone also like Tiffany from this new era is looking good, because she is kind of one of the least threatening on the season, I think, because of the low placement. She's from the new era. Not a lot of people know what she could do.
I question with Tiffany, though, whether she's actually good enough to win. Like, I see a cast that I see actually a lot of very strong players on there who also don't have the highest threat level. And I look at Tiffany, and I haven't watched all of 46, but I do feel like Tiffany didn't strike me as a player that was one of the strongest players on that cast. Like, I'm not looking at her and thinking, like, I think she's got the potential to be, like, a top-tier player. Mm-hmm. For me, I'm blessed, because my two favorite players in International Survivor on Survivor 50, my number two is Christian Hibiki, who I love.
Okay.
Like, obvious nerdy reasons.
Yeah.
And I am so stoked to see him play again. And my number one, and I am absolutely blessed, this person's casting completely saved the casting for me and is the reason why I'm like actually all right with the casting. Emily Flippin. I'm obsessed with Emily Flippin. Which is the best, like, one of the best Survivor characters of the new era. There's something about a blunt, nerdy, awkward financial analyst who almost got voted out first and then managed to maneuver through her whole season on the bottom. That just really speaks to me.
Yeah. I don't remember, see you in any of the players you're naming right now, Maya.
I don't talk at these choices. Well, she's a financial analyst, so 100%. But I remember watching Emily Flippin on 45, and that was the last season I watched before I went out to Survivor. And I watched her play, and watching her, I'm like, this is what I would, as much as I don't like that this would be me, this is what I'd be if I played Survivor, right? Like, this would be how I'd get out there and I'd piss everyone off and I'd just have to try and struggle to survive. And then I'd build some good connections if I have a bit of time with them, and my strategic game would be strong. And then I got out there and I remember like day five or day six or something, and I'm chatting to people. I'm like, I'm literally just playing Emily Flippin's game. Like, she got saved by someone quitting. I got saved by someone blowing up their own game. Like,
Yeah, no, I love those choices. I mean, I really think that the biggest disappointment for a lot of people was the cast as a whole. But when you start to look at the cast like granularly,
a lot of individual choices are awesome.
It makes a lot of sense. So, I mean, Christian, I think, you brought up Christian. I think Christian's a great one. I think that's the person that Christian and Rick and Angelina and Chrissy, the fact that those four haven't played again just because there hasn't been an opportunity. Is crazy. And the one I throw in there is Dom Abate. That's the one where I'm like shocked he's not there.
Yeah.
I feel like his game was so aggressive and so much fun, and he was so liked. Mm-hmm. But I also think that him going on the challenge might have hurt him a little bit with, you know, casting. But yeah, I think Christian's funny because I know Omer Zahir from Survivor 42 says that's his winner pick. And then I'm in the camp more of, I think Christian's going to be an early boot because
I think he's a big threat.
I think he's a big threat, and I honestly think he's a bigger threat than he should be.
Back together with a different group of brochachos.
I love that. I mean,
can I give you one more hot Survivor 50 take?
Right.
I think that one of the biggest casting mistakes of Survivor 50 is casting Suri. I think that, and so many people hate that take. That's, I appreciate that you agree with that. I don't like, she's played so many times. She's playing in Australia, she's played Traders, she's played Blood on the Grass or whatever, Snake in the Grass or whatever it was, the little one. She, like, and I don't know that she's got like anything new to offer as well. And there's other like old school players that I think would have something new and different to offer compared to their previous games. Like, obviously she's TV gold, but I, as far as casting, especially for something that with such limited spots for so many people, I really don't understand why she's there. Aussie falls into that a bit as well, but I get the appeal to the casuals for Aussie, like get some like old school challenge beats like with massive name value. But
for us, it's for me at least, it's been Aussie, Cerise, Stephanie. You could have replaced them with like James, Amanda, and then give me another old school woman. And it's not that I dislike any of those three. I just feel like we've seen every version of them. Like,
Like you said earlier, get Rob Cessonino back on there.
Sari doesn't feel like she can win. And so that's my biggest problem there. And then Stephanie and Ozzy, I've seen them play.
Yeah, I don't think they just got anything interesting or else to add. Yeah, anyway.
Do I think Suri could win? No, but I also just got finished watching Game Changers, and it was incredible just to watch her navigate the game and not and be one of the biggest threats out there and not get a single vote. I'm just excited to watch her navigate this game. Would I like someone else? Sure, but I'm not upset, but I'm not like happy about it. I'm like somewhere in the middle of like, all right, let's see what happens, because she is able to navigate around a threat level.
Miles, what were they doing though? Why didn't they vote for the entire season?
They were just taking her along because they know they can beat her in the challenge. Like, that's the problem there, is that like you just take that person along, like big threat, but you don't need to take them out because you can just take them out later. Like, either that happens or she goes out early and kind of the legacy of her being the most screwed player of all time is kind of ruined. Like, I just think her story as it is right now is like
fantastic. Yeah, I agree.
I love that. I love that we said like we're gonna wrap it up like 10-20
That
minutes
was like
ago,
15 minutes.
And now we're just like talking to the Australia versus the world chat, and we've just been talking about Survivor 50 for like 20 minutes.
I feel bad now because like you made that whole thing about Saria, and then I was like, all right, I think we're done. And then we went on for like 15 minutes after that. So everybody's gonna be like, man, no, Phil, I couldn't have misread that.
I could talk Survivor
moment
forever.
Any more than you did. I know. And trust me, I could too. And, you know, I have to go to work. Like I said, this is like that weird thing of we started so early my time that I'm like, I have to go to work. But we got to do this again in the future because I enjoyed this. And you brought up Emily. Emily Flippin was actually the episode we dropped on Monday for Everything You Need to Know About. So we're doing a series also. And these are all more short form. We're doing like 20 to 25 minutes on all of these where we're talking about everything you need to know about each player and what, you know, what, how many votes they've had against them, their placements, you know, how old they are, how much different their game is. And Emily was one that we were talking about where it's like, Emily should have a very low, small target on her back coming into this game, because that was the episode we dropped on Monday. And it seems like she would be a threat to a lot of people just because of kind of her legend in the new era. But when you really think about it,
So
hopefully you get your dream there, and Emily and Christian can get together at some point. Maybe they'll even start on the same tribe. Wouldn't that be something?
And maybe
they play Blood on the Clock Tower together, so they have a connection.
Yeah. Yeah. I know.
They could play together in the sand.
There you go. There you go. Bringing back the classics, of course. But well, for everything else that we have going on, now I'll do like an actual outro here, right? So we're going to keep doing these, Everything You Need to Know About. Those are airing on Mondays and Thursdays at 1 o'clock. We're doing them during the lunch hour. So if you want to tune in and catch those, you can. We're doing the defining episodes every Tuesday and Friday at 1 o'clock. So that's been going on. Although next week I might be putting one of those on a Wednesday because I have Mike Bloom on Thursday night. The two of us are going to be talking about recasting Survivor 50. So that's good. And we're doing it in a unique way. So it's going to be pretty fun. And that's next Thursday night on the 26th. And then the next week I'm going to have Survivor Analytics on July 1st. And we're going to talk about ranking these players for Survivor 50 by threat level and things like that. So we're going to actually do a ranking. I know I try not to do those too much, but we're going to do that on July 1. And then we're going to do the brand steal the next week. We were talking about doing the brand steal today, but I talked myself out of it because, Miles, I didn't think we were going to have you on today. I didn't think we were going to be doing AU versus the world coverage. And I'm like, why are we going to load so many things into one? So we're going to wait and do the brand steal. And whenever the tribes do get announced, I'll be doing a tribe reaction video for sure, because I know everybody is super excited to hear about that for 50. And once AU versus the world starts, we're going to be covering it. We just need the show to start. So if we can make that happen, that would be nice. And we did our traders cast reaction the other day too. So we have a lot going on. It's been an actually unbelievably busy June because people are really excited about 50 and AU versus the world, and the traders had information dropping. So people are pumped about this stuff, and I'm happy that it's been a successful month, and I'm happy that Miles joined us and took time out of his night. It still blows my mind that we can be on the same planet. For you right now, it's 11:10 at night and I'm starting my day. But here we are. So thank you so much for joining us, Miles. Everybody like this video, subscribe to the channel, follow us on social media, and we'll see you next time.
Yeah, it was a pleasure.